Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Professor Shabir Mahdi, Dean of the Faculty of Health Sciences. A very good morning to you. Thanks for joining us. How are you doing this morning?
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
So, do we see or do you think that there's a link to the surge of or the reoccurrence of polio that we are seeing? Is that potentially linked to what we've seen in the anti-vax movement?
So fortunately not. Unfortunately, what did happen is that during the course of COVID-19, the number of children that were either not vaccinated or not adequately vaccinated, including against polio, declined. But the reason for that was more because of disruption of immunization services to children because of the focus on COVID-19 rather than because mothers were reluctant to bring the children forward for vaccination. And I think what's also important to recognize that the cases of polio that have been documented, there's two different types of polio. The one is what you call the wild type circulating virus. And unfortunately, in a country such as Mozambique that hasn't had a polio case for years now, the wild type polio virus 1 has been found to be circulating. But in many other places, what happens to the polio vaccine is that it has the possibility of being able to mutate. And it does possibly pose sort of a small threat of people developing polio because of mutation that can happen in a vaccine. But this is for polio vaccine, which is a live virus vaccine. And that's what we refer to as circulating vaccine-derived polio virus. That particular type of virus has been found to be circulating in a number of places, including in the United Kingdom as an example. But the reason for the increase in circulation of polio itself, of the virus, is more because of disruptions of childhood immunization services, which is indirectly linked to COVID-19, but not necessarily because of the misinformation that was peddled around COVID vaccine.
Okay, so that's important to establish. So it isn't because of the disinformation necessarily, but it is because people weren't able, because there was this incredible amount of disruption. How does a virus, how does something like polio that is effectively has, or we had thought to be virtually eradicated, how does it start up again? Where does it actually come from if people around don't have it?
So when we look at a virus and we look at its genetic composition, we're able to possibly originated from. And as you correctly pointed out, wild-type polio virus hasn't been circulating in Africa for a few years now. We've been fairly successful in eliminating it in many, many countries. But what happened in Mozambique is that the virus that's circulating currently in Mozambique, as an example, is traced back to Pakistan.
Right.
And obviously, when people move across borders, if they are infected with the virus, even if they're not symptomatic, they can then take the virus from one place to another. So there are a few countries, including Pakistan and Afghanistan, as an example, as well as more recently Yemen, where this wild-type polio virus has been identified. And when people move around, the virus moves around as well, and unfortunately you can start getting spread of the virus, especially when there isn't adequate number of people, a high percentage of people that are vaccinated in population.
So that is and to pull it back, in other words, to get it under control again, is that much harder?
Well, it's not that hard, but it does take substantial amount of effort. So what needs to happen in a country such as Mozambique, as an example, is that they need to try to get more than 90% of all of the children under age of 5 vaccinated over a very short period of time,
right,
in a matter of weeks. And we do that with what we refer to as supplementary immunization activities, where healthcare workers will go door to door to identify children under age of 5 and give them the polio drop. But it is very resource intensive, but at the same time it is required if you want to get on top of the circulation of the virus in the community.
In terms of standard procedure in South Africa, what is our approach? When are they immunized?
So in South Africa, the children are immunized with two different types of polio vaccine. The one is what we refer to as an oral polio vaccine. These are polio drops. and that is usually given at the time of birth. Right. Then when children go for their routine vaccines at 6 weeks, 10 weeks, 14 weeks, and again at 15 to 18 months, they get a vaccine which got six different types of vaccines in one. And included in those six components of the vaccine is the polio virus vaccine.
Uh-huh.
That is the vaccine that's given as an injectable, whereas the first dose in South Africa is given as oral drops.
And once that is, once those have been administered, the kids are pretty much safe and protected.
Absolutely, and especially protected against developing polio itself.
Mm-hmm.
If the vaccine that we give as an injection might work less well in protecting children from being infected, but in South Africa, because we've got an oral polio vaccine, the polio drops as well, that does assist in what we refer to as mucosal immunity, immunity in a gut, which does protect against infection. But if children are adequately vaccinated, it's highly unlikely that they will develop polio, the disease, or even be infected.
Right. We've got around about 2 minutes, and I just wanted to use the time to ask you your thoughts on COVID-19 booster shots. What is your approach now? We've seen, we read articles of a bit of an upsurge in traces in wastewater in the Western Cape. Does that mean that people are at risk again? If people have had their, a couple of months ago, had their second or third shots, should they be looking to be boosted now?
Yeah, so right now we're seeing an increase in cases, not just in the Western Cape, but also in Gauteng and in Limpopo. And anyone above the age of 55, if their last dose of vaccine was more than 4 to 6 months ago, they would be well advised to get an additional dose of vaccine, in addition to which any other underlying medical conditions, obesity included, they too would be well advised to get an additional dose of vaccine, be it the third or even the fourth dose of vaccine. And certain people that have not been vaccinated in those categories are also well advised to be vaccinated immediately, because we will see a continuing increase in number of cases over the course of the next few weeks.
There's been a lot of negative publicity, and I don't know if it's from anti-vaxxers, I don't know if it's from credible sources around the vaccine, around testing. Is this the same continued misinformation, or is there validity in this?
Yeah, it's very much misinformation, and it's sort of manipulation of what is said in the public domain by some individuals. So as an example, the narrative that Pfizer has said that the vaccine hasn't been tested against transmission, and it doesn't protect against transmission. What people then interpret it to be is that a vaccine hasn't been tested at all to see whether it protects people from being infected. When in fact the vaccine has been tested and it has been shown, especially for the wild-type virus, the initial virus that are circulating, that it's highly effective in preventing infection. And if people are protected against infection, they'll be less likely to transmit the virus. But then, subsequent to those studies, we do additional studies to see whether the vaccine actually impacts on transmission between people. And those studies certainly have also been fairly robust, and it has shown that vaccine prevents transmission between people, that's of the virus, especially for a wild-type virus, but not necessarily for the more recent variants such as Omicron. So still a lot of misinformation, and at the end of the day, I think the important thing is that vaccines are efficacious, effective, they're safe, and they do what we require them to do, and most importantly, and that is protect people against severe disease and dying from COVID-19.